This is Lydia Lunch, and while I'm lying home in bed doing what I do best, you're listening to WUSB 90.1 on the FM dial. Go back to bed.
That's right, Lydia Lunch herself. And right there telling you exactly what you're listening to. I also had the chance to talk to our friend at the station, Charlie Rao, about his brand new record called Hereth. And it's quite a masterwork. And Charlie deals in sort of, I guess you might think, minutia. And these small, beautiful, to-the-point, emotion-filled instrumentals, and it does a lot more than you might think. So we're going to talk to Charlie, I think, right now. I think we're going to hear a tune first, though. All right, here on WUSB Stony Brook, Charlie Rao on Finn's Revolution. Some beautiful music right there, and we have the guitarist composer of that material here right now with us, our friend Charlie Rao. Charlie, welcome once again to Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook.
Thanks for having me back, Finn. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Yeah, I agree. And today we're pre-recording this little baby right here in beautiful downtown Bushwick, right? And at Charlie's place, and it's a really cool, very, as you know, as I always thought it would be, a bit sparse.
Like, I like to live the Spartan life.
You do. You do. So it's always great to see Charlie. And Charlie has just had his official release of his brand new record, Hereth, which is just come out on the 18th, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And Charlie, tell us a little, first of all, your musical background. We've discussed it before, but for new listeners here tonight, tell us a little about how you got involved with music.
I started playing horns when I was younger, when I was 10 and 11, playing clarinet and saxophone, mostly playing jazz. I played in a saxophone quartet when I was a teenager and got started again when I was around 11. And when I was 13, I started taking an interest in the guitar, and my father, who's a guitarist, taught me how to play. And that sort of took over from there because I realized I could mostly play by myself, sort of write songs and accompany myself in a way that I wasn't really feeling a connection to with the horns. And it was also a way to connect with other kinds of music that I liked, more pop music and country and folk music. And, you know, stuff I was listening to on the radio, I could figure out songs I liked. So that's how I got into guitar, and it just very soon took over, started studying with some local people in town and just taking it more and more seriously.
And your dad was mainly a folk player, right?
Yeah, mainly a folk and a sort of a folk and a rock player, a great finger style acoustic player, also a great lead electric player. He played lead guitar in bands when he was younger, and also a banjo player and a pedal steel player, totally self-taught. So, yeah, he's very inspirational for me and my music.
And you've certainly got some genetics there to have developed your own style, which is what he was doing too, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He has a very distinctive style, and it's made a big impact on the way that I play and the way I write. Hmm.
So you kind of, over the course of your professional career, kind of delved into these different worlds of music, but still maintaining this voice that you're constantly working on. In fact, working on some, you used to do duets, for example, with our friend Conchetta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you still do work with her on occasion.
Yeah, we actually just shared a bill together at the Park Church Co-op with Conchetta doing some music with her new project. And she also has a record coming out soon,
right?
That I guessed in on a couple of tracks. And then I performed solo. So yeah, we're still putting on some shows together and have more in the works.
And you also do work with Cornelius Eady.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And he also...
Professor here at Stony Brook.
Yeah. Yeah. He also has a record coming out that we're going to premiere at Princeton at the Poetry Festival on Friday.
Well, that's pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah. And that's a record we recorded down at Sun Studios in Memphis. So we're very excited about that.
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
That's great. But your approach is your diversity of styles and stuff like that you've brought together. And this... Hiraeth seems to be like one of these things that's it's because it's just you. It's like this pinnacle kind of style for you, you know? It's like something you've been moving towards. Would you say that?
Yeah. I kind of feel like when I was working, I wrote the music over the course of about 2.5-3 years while I was traveling and touring, playing both by myself and with various ensembles around mostly Northern and Western Europe, a lot in Scandinavia. And some in France and Belgium and Holland. And during that time, I was writing the music coming out of this concept of Hiraeth, the Welsh word that doesn't have an English translation, but approximates to a sort of very specific nostalgia, missing or longing for a place or a point in time that you can't return to and possibly never existed. And I really relate to that idea, especially when I'm traveling by myself. So I started accumulating these songs written about people and places I would encounter that sort of epitomized that feeling. And this record for me is very much a distillation of everything that I've been sort of arriving to, I would say, when I recorded the songs during the Robert Rauschenberg Artist Residency.
Right. Once again, a quick step backwards, but you did win this beautiful... Rauschenberg Artist Residency. It was in Florida, is that correct?
Yeah, it was in Captiva, Florida. Yeah,
Island of Captiva.
Yeah, it was a really very privileged to have had that experience and to record this music there. It's the first time I ever recorded my own record as well. So it was, in a lot of ways, it's kind of a milestone for me and a very much a distillation of everything that I'm trying to do and still trying to do. I still haven't really arrived anywhere. It's just the latest stop on the trip, I guess, but it is the closest I feel I've ever gotten to what I'm trying to do.
Mm. And tell us a little about the first song we just heard to open the show tonight.
That was actually the title track, Hiraeth, that I wrote. I like the first track. This is my second record, and the first record, Veriditas, the opening track was an improvisation on the idea of Veriditas, which is a word that Hildegard von Bingen used a lot in her writing that translates to greenness in 12th century Latin, that she used as a term of renewal. And that was the theme of my first record. And I like the idea of the opening track being the title track that sort of encompasses the idea of what the record is about. So that's what this composition was. Hiraeth was my way of putting into a concise musical lullaby statement of what that concept and that feeling of Hiraeth means to me.
Hmm. Hmm. And that Welsh language, you know, it's not just that mysterious word. The Welsh language is a mysterious thing.
Oh, yeah, it's incredible.
It's incredible.
Yeah, I have some friends from Northern England and around the UK that either speak it or are from Wales or are familiar with some of it. And ever since I found out about this word, I've been asking them more and more about it. And I think it's a beautiful language. I love it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's got all these cuts and yet it's lyrical and it's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so you recorded this beautiful record, and tell us a little about your attitude about composition. I mean, you tend to write very small pieces.
Mm-hmm.
In general, and where does that come from? Do you feel like those short pieces just capture exactly what you want to capture? You don't want to go any farther? Or do you Do you want to keep everything small? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I do. I do like the idea of short form songs. I like the idea of writing music that hopefully a big part of my intention with this music is that it's memorable, that you can hear it once or twice and you can remember it, you know, not necessarily note for note, but that you can hear it once and maybe walk away with part of it lingering. And I like the idea of writing albums that have short songs that are designed to be memorable in the way that a folk song or a lullaby is designed to be, where it's designed to just be sort of passed generation to generation, which I hope these songs have the effect of. I like the idea of them being, again, a distillation. And I don't really have to try to write them this short. That's just usually how they come out. It's not like I'm writing 6-minute opuses all the time and trying to shave
editing
them down. Yeah, this is really just how they come out, and I like that. And I don't want to. I'm not interested in making them longer, but I also feel like they don't need to be. And I feel like a lot of songs that I hear are longer than I would like them to be. When I hear them, if I'm out or if I'm listening to playlists and things like that, a lot of the time I'll hear a song and I'll like it, but I'll get sort of tired of it because I feel like it's not succinct enough.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the artists that I admire, like the Innocence Mission is one of my favorite groups, and Karen Paris, one of my favorite songwriters of all time. I feel like she's a real master of that. She's very brilliant at writing songs that are concise but not short, you know, not choked.
Mm-hmm.
And that the intention behind the song seems very intact, even when the song is a minute long. And to me, that's also, it's a challenge to fit all of the intention into a short amount of time. The intention has to be very, again, concentrated, distilled. So it's not about presenting only part of an idea. It's about an idea being actually concise in its nature.
Mm.
And I say this all the time, but I'm reminded by something I think about all the time that my previous mentor and friend, Connie Crothers, told me when I was studying improvisation with her. And she told me that something to keep in mind is that every note has its own little universe. And that's something that I really took onto. And I think about that a lot. And that's a huge inspiration on how I got on track with composing this way, because it does feel natural to me.
Hmm.
And based on that idea that Connie talked about, that in minutia, there is already a multitude of ideas and of concepts and of emotions, and just really honing in on that and almost using music as more of a magnifying glass instead of a megaphone, I guess, is sort of what I'm after.
Beautiful. Okay. You want to play something for us live?
Yeah. I'll play a song. The first composition, actually, of the group of songs that are on the record is track 2 that I called Patience. And I wrote this song about 3 years ago now, I think, while I was on tour in Europe. And this song specifically came about when I was thinking about how your mind wanders when you're alone for long periods of time. So if you're on an airplane or a bus and you know, you're not, there's no one to talk to, and you're just kind of there, where your mind wanders to, and how you start recalling things and wondering how accurate those things are. And at least that happens with me. I don't know if that's that common of a thing, but I kind of get lost in my thoughts that way and reanalyzing my own memories.
Okay.
So that's what I wrote this song about, and it's called Patience.
Charlie Rao right here on WUSB Stony Brook with Patience from his new record, Hiraeth. And really lovely, Charlie.
Thank you very
much. Always a pleasure to be in your presence while you're playing live. So I always
thank you so much.
Yeah. And speaking of that, what kind of reactions do you get from concert audiences when you play?
It varies. Recently, I did the album release show in Nashville for Hiraeth, and it was part of a festival that I've participated in. This was the third time, actually, called the Melodica Festival, and it's a folk festival that travels to different cities and different countries all over the world. And it's I've performed at two of them, both in Iceland, which is the main one happens in Reykjavik. And this was the first one in Nashville, and I was lucky enough to be invited to perform, and it just coincided with around when the record was coming out, so I made it sort of the release show. And that was a very beautiful show. The audience reaction was, while I was playing, dead silent, and then very inquisitive afterwards, and it ranges. Sometimes, people, they hear that it's quiet, and they hear there's no singing, and they'll sort of, start... maybe quiet conversations and sort of have it like going on in the background. And I actually don't really mind that. I don't expect, people to be dead silent and staring at me the whole time I'm playing. I don't mind if people talk. It's more about however an individual person wants to absorb what's happening is fine with me. And I can usually feel the difference in the energy in the room if I'm just being ignored. Because sometimes if people are talking, I feel like it's a big misconception that performers have. And it is hard to know the difference, but I feel like after a couple of decades of doing this, sometimes when people are talking, it doesn't mean they're not listening to you.
Right.
And sometimes that's okay. Right. That they're talking, they might very well be talking about like, wow, I really like this with their friend. That's just what people do. Not everybody is not everyone's a performer or a musician, and not everyone takes music in the same way. So I feel it's pretty rare that I perform this music and have a reaction that I consider to be negative or that I'm turned off by.
Imagine.
The ideal reaction is that people would be sort of drawn in. And like at the release show, which was fantastic, sort of drawn in and, hopefully want to talk afterwards and know more about it. I try to talk minimally, but give enough information about what's happening that they have some context to lose themselves to. So
that's why they can listen to this podcast right now. They're just going to be on and catch up with it. And you play all kinds of venues. Remind everyone. It's not just the official kind of concert events. You also play bars and you play a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, yeah.
And you and I have talked about this before, but very often, people are in a bar, games are on TV.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of things happen. Yeah. And what I've noticed when Charlie has played is that guys are talking at the bar and they're, watching the game and they're saying, cursing about whatever play happened. And Charlie's playing. There'd be a little break in whatever they're watching and whatever they're yammering about. And all of a sudden it gets their attention and their heads spin. And they look and they pay attention. I've always been very impressed by that.
Oh, thank you.
And I think that your approach is actually something that does draw people in.
That is the goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. In one way or another, sometimes just having something happen, I think with quietness and stillness, when it happens in a place, especially a city like New York, where everything is so crazy and we're all so exhausted and stressed out all the time, sometimes just having it happen is enough to at least jar some kind of thought process, even if they're not listening to me or paying attention to me. Just the fact that it's happening, I feel like it's worth doing in different venues and not sticking to one kind, just to expose it, expose the, that you can play music this way anywhere.
Right. It's not the sensory, everything has to be a sensory overload of everything.
Yeah.
Right. People can step back and appreciate the space without it being completely empty.
Right.
But with it having these highlights. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've definitely done a fair amount of shows where I am specifically asked to do, like a 2-hour set of solo guitar, and it's meant to be, sort of a ambient background music. And I play these songs and that also, you know, that's a totally different thing, because it's not necessarily a performance, but, you know, the music is still there. People can make up their own minds on how to react.
Mm-hmm.
And as of late, I've been co-designing a new class for mothers and newborns, using this music as sort of a sonic epicenter for it. It's not a performance by any means. I'm not there to promote my music or my tours or anything like that. But I'm just, you know, I was just asked to specifically introduce this music from Hear Wraith as a musical atmosphere in this quiet room, you know, because I was, you know, I was fortunate enough to be invited to do it, because the music seems to be, something that infants are receptive to in their own way. And that's really fascinating to see.
And that is.
Making eye contact with a 2-month-old while you're playing this stuff is pretty intense.
Can imagine.
Yeah, yeah. I really enjoy it. And you've been
involved with working with kids for a while.
I have, yeah. With ages from 6 months to 3 years. And then also teaching private lessons to, you know, children as young as 5 and 6. So, I have a lot of experience with that, and just sort of empathizing with the mindset and the developmental stages has had a huge impact also on making the songs shorter and of the lullaby structure, because I feel like there's some depth to that, and I feel like the music is often, music that's considered lullaby music is often considered sort of dumbed down or, you know, like cute, you know, which it is, Well, it's cute. It's not dumbed down, but it's considered oversimplified music, and I think just the opposite. I think it's very deep music. It's music that will last for hundreds of years because people will remember it.
Right.
Remember it if there's no other record of it.
Right.
So there's something to be said for that. And music comes to mind like the Epitaph of Cyclos, which is the earliest known notated melody, which was used for what they think was used for a funeral in ancient Greece. And there's recordings of it, approximations of what this early notation was. And it's a very short melody, and it's fantastic.
Hmm.
And it survived all this time for that reason. So there's something to be said for the intention of distillation being meant to be remembered and felt. And that's why I model my songs after lullabies, because I feel like they are the example of that.
Right. And the fact that you can both turn the heads around of babies and turn the heads around of drunk guys at bars is pretty impressive.
Well, we're all after the same thing. We just want to sleep.
There you go. Well put. Can you play something else for us from the new one?
Cool. I will play next a song called Black Sea Dress. And this is a song I wrote inspired by one of my favorite poets, Anna Akhmatova, that my mother actually introduced me to. She sent me a copy of Anna's long-form poem, Requiem, which consists of a lot of shorter poems. And one of them really specifically spoke to me, called The Sentence, in which she's talking about her family and friends disappearing during the Stalin regime, and just the familiar disappearing into thin air and how she's going to continue with that. It's a very powerful, very brief, you know, just gut punch of a poem. So I wanted to write something for the record inspired by that. And I named it Black Sea Dress. It's taken from a very specific translation that I happen to favor over the multiple ones I've read. But it's taken from a line in the poem where she refers to that as symbolism. So I'll play that one for you next.
Thank you.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Charlie Rye right here on Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook. I think we're going to hear something from the record now. And I think when we come back, we will discuss some interesting travel journeys that I was always fascinated with about Charlie, and talk about what the future brings. Charlie, what do you want to hear from the new one now?
Let's play Norma and Wallace, which is the closing track on the record. And I named it after the figures that make up the album cover. I found them in a thrift store in Captiva. And they're a spinning couple that you wind them up and it plays the music box version of the Charleston. And they're this kind of like very slow spinning music box couple. And I just thought they were so cool when I found them in the store. So I named them Norma and Wallace. And I wrote this song during a rainstorm while I was at, it's the only song that I actually wrote at the residency that's on the record. Everything else was written during a touring period. But I just went down to the studio I was recording in, which was just this huge empty room called the Garage Studio with a massive vaulted ceiling and this natural room reverb. And I opened all the doors and just set up the mic and just recorded it with the rain in the background. And Norman Wallace is also the name of, during the pre-sale of the record, there was a special collaboration with my sister, Christina Rauf Fishburne, who's a amazing writer with just a wild imagination and just a brilliant sense of storytelling. And she, we talked back and forth on what we're working on a lot. And I was telling her about this, about Norman Wallace. And she actually wrote a short story about them. And together we came up with this idea of packaging this story instead of CDs with the record. So she made 30 miniature copies of books, handmade and handwritten, some of them with little paintings in them. They're truly fantastic. And we, you know, packaged them in little tins and had 30 of them, and they all sold out in under 2 days, which was so much fun for her to see, especially, I'm sure, see her creations, you know, just be so appreciated. And it's kind of fun because now we're getting all these pictures on social media of people receiving them and opening them up.
And they're one-of-a-kind pieces
of
art.
Each one is one-of-a-kind, yeah.
Yeah, how cool.
Yeah, so this is the song that accompanies those books and closes out the record.
Okay, let's hear that right now. We're going to be right back live with Charlie Rao. Well, that was new from Hiraeth, Charlie's new record, Charlie Rao's new record, and really stunning, really beautiful. It's completely absorbing the whole record, and it's really nice just to have on. And as Charlie said earlier to us, you know, people can take the music any particular way. So especially non-lyrical music, very often, you know, strictly instrumental music is very often easier to do with that, but you make it even easier with that because of the tones and everything else. It can be background music if you're mm-hmm. listening to the record at home. It can be something you sit and contemplate.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
And it runs on all those levels and everything in between. And very beautiful and impressive stuff. One of the things that, you know, you and I have discussed before on the air is we have a mutual love, although now you've been there more than me, but a mutual love of Iceland.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you've done some pretty unique tours in Iceland
mm-hmm.
and venues and things like that.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk a little about your experience visiting Iceland, maybe for the first time and then how it's gone most recently?
Yeah, the first time I went actually was the very first time I ever did an artist residency. It was to do the Klaustrid residency in East Iceland. And I went in 2010 accompanying a choreographer that I recently have been working with, actually, Megan Harold. And we were writing a piece for music and dance at the residency, and I had an opportunity to perform it in the East and then go to Reykjavik and perform it there and then come back to the States and tour it and perform it as well. But I've since returned several times and done tours with my really good friend and phenomenal songwriter, Svavar Knutur. When he had a new record come out in 2015, I met up with him and joined him on a short little run through Iceland where I would open for him playing solo guitar music and then play guitar with him. And we would play in little villages in different spaces, and that was really fantastic. And then in 2016, the following year, I did a tour with Ava Ingolf, who's a brilliant soloist, violinist. And we worked up duo arrangements of Icelandic hymns from the 1500s and did a tour mostly through the east of just sort of the east fjords and coastal villages playing these, you know, traditional Icelandic hymns, and ended in Reykjavik playing in Mengi, which is a phenomenal, it's sort of like the Stone, I guess, if you're going to put it in New York terms, but a really like kind of progressive, a lot of experimental music, but also a lot of new music and classical music. It's owned by a Skúli Sverrisson, the bassist, who's worked with everybody, works in New York a lot as well. So that was fantastic. And then just recently I've been back as well. I was just there in May to play at another one of the Melodica festivals in Hafnarfjörður, so just south of Reykjavik. So yeah, I've spent a lot of time there and gained a lot of inspiration traveling around and just seeing it's such a beautiful place, and the culture and the history and the people are so wonderful. And the history of the sagas with the recordings of all the Viking journeys were all recorded there. And that's really interesting to look into. And there's just so much happening. So much happening, but also a lot of stillness and a lot of peace, which is how culturally the Icelandic people prefer it to be. And that's something I really admire about the country and the culture, is an appreciation for stillness, an appreciation for simplicity, and appreciation for, you know, be it in nature or socially or anything, just an appreciation for minutia and detail. And what's precious and what's sacred. I really get a sense of that there. And I think that's what draws me to not just Iceland, but that part of the world, the far northern countries in Scandinavia and above. It's just a really fascinating part of the earth. There's something, yeah. Something in the water. I don't know.
Something about those long nights.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's very, very inspirational for me. And I love Iceland. It'll always be, I'll always have a connection to that place.
Yeah. I enjoyed the one of the stories we talked about last time of, which I'm just thinking about that specific one now, of some of the villages you played in where literally the entire town came out.
And yeah.
Still didn't necessarily fill the whole room.
No, yeah, yeah. I mean, some of those places have, you know, maybe 50 or 60 people there.
Right.
And so if half of them come out, that's a pretty good turnout, you know?
That's right. If that happened in New York, you'd be in a lot of trouble in a venue.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's like the coolest to me, doing that you did that, not only in Reykjavik, but also, you know, throughout the hinterlands.
As yeah, they say. Yeah, it's fantastic. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, you and I also have a love of something a lot of people don't have a love for, which is some Icelandic drinks, liqueurs mainly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which are unique in the world, shall we say. You either love them or you hate them.
Yeah, it's true. Very polarizing. I'm always excited when I bring them back. I'm like, guys, you got to try this. I'm like, your loss. More for me.
That's right. There you
More
go.
For me and Finn.
There you go. So right now, as far as the record goes, it's out there, right? How can people get their hands on it?
I guess the easiest way to find it, it's only available digitally. So it's available through my label, Destiny Records. It's on Spotify, it's on Apple Music, it's on all those things. The easiest way to find it would be to go to my website, Charlie Rao. So just charlieierauh.com. And there's a link right on the homepage where you can click and listen. And it'll take you to the label page. And also there's links to Spotify and Apple Music.
And links to all your other music.
And links to all my other music, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now you're on the road like constantly playing all these places, really promoting the record. Where's the next journey is taking you to?
The next show I have is going to be in Pittsburgh on the 26th. I'm going to be playing at Acoustic Music Works, and I'm very excited for this show. It's going to be an all-guitar show. I'll be doing a solo set, and there will be a duo set from Mike Baghetta and Nick Melvois. And Randy Branch will also be playing solo. And those are three guitarists that I'm really inspired by and look up to in a lot of ways. So I'm just thrilled to be part of it. So that'll be, I believe, at 7:30 in Pittsburgh at Acoustic Music Works. Let me just double check that real quick.
And you also had this really cool goal of playing in all the states, right? Or so many states, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to cover as much ground as I can. And just I had a couple of really great shows in Portland playing in two bookstores where I met some fantastic people and, you know, played fully acoustic in these beautiful spaces. And I'm playing in Pittsburgh. I have a show coming up in Blacksburg, Virginia at Tea and Jam Cafe. And then Washington, D.C. For a group called Viaduct, a concert group and a sort of home concert series. And I'll be playing some shows in New York as well. Cameron Mizell and myself are going to play music from our duo record, What We Have in Common, which is also out on Destiny Records. And we're going to be playing in Beacon, New York, at the Town Crier on November 23rd at 6.
Beacon's a great town.
I love Beacon, yeah. And have some West Coast dates coming up as well. I'm going to be playing solo guitar and joining Mark Goldenberg, who's a fantastic LA-based guitar player. In Ojai, California, at the Ojai Underground Exchange on December 13th. And then really excited to play in San Francisco, or play my own music in San Francisco for the first time December 15th at the Center for New Music. That'll be at 7 p.m. December 15th. So lots going on.
Yeah, you're playing and playing and doing all this great work It's got to be gratifying to you that you're getting a response to the album, right? That's nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, it's something I'm always nervous about.
Sure.
Yeah, just putting music out or traveling around, is anyone going to care? Right. And like I said, it's not that I'm looking for a specific external validation, because people can, like I said, care in a lot of different kinds of ways. But it still is a pretty stark difference of caring or not caring.
Yes.
it's nice to, you know, play. Sometimes I'll be playing in a city I've never been to, and there's not a lot of people there. But sometimes people will show up I don't know that have heard my music before, and to me that's a big deal. They go, yeah, I heard your first record. Looking forward to hearing this one. I mean, that's huge for me.
Yeah, it is huge.
So just having experiences like that, it's fuel, you know, to keep doing this. And just to know that there are people out there that are listening and that enjoy it, that's enough for me to just keep doing it as long as I'm able to do it.
Yeah. And you always have babies listening.
Exactly. I can always fall back on my captive audience of 2-month-olds.
You've had a beautiful career so far, and it's only getting better. Why don't you play something live for us now, if you'd like?
Great. Yeah, I will play another song off the record. This is a song called Fano that's about a small island off the coast of Denmark that I played at on tour a couple of years ago in a little art gallery that was really fantastic. It was a beautiful show. I was playing in a trio, actually, with my friends Anna Marta Egan, and we were playing in a trio doing sort of a combination of compositions, you know, that we had all written, and we played just a really nice set for the community there with Anna Marta Egan and Niels Anderson, I meant to say earlier. So I wrote this when I got back, and it seemed to fit well on this record because that was such a mystical little place. Just like you had to take a ferry to get there, and it's covered in fog, and it's like, you know, thatch roofed homes, and just they have their own specific type of folk music there that I started learning about. That's really fantastic. So I wanted to write a song just to mark that memory. So this is called Fano.
Fano right here on WUSB Stony Brook from Charlie Rao's new record, Hiraeth, and which we can find out about just by going to charlierao.com or just Googling Charlie Rao. That's CharlieRauh. And just Google him and you'll find him. And apparently he's everywhere. He's all over the planet, traveling everywhere. And if you get a chance to see him, please do, but please give the music a listen on his website there, just so you get to experience it a bit. And I'm sure at some point he'll be coming to your town, wherever you are, because he covers a lot of ground. And it's always a pleasure to have Charlie on the air with us. So Pittsburgh is the next gig, and what about how's the press going with this? Is that, you're getting some press, good press responses?
Yeah, my publicist launched the campaign about 2 weeks ago, and I was actually just talking to him yesterday. So the reviews, he has reviews on the way, so they should start hitting this week.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So we'll see. Nice. Yeah, we'll see what people have to say. That's right. Always the most nerve-wracking part.
Well, I have a feeling you're going to get some good responses, I have to say, because they're the same people that are listening to, you know, on the shows. So, all right. So once again, check it out, charlierao.com. Charlie, let's go out with a what track do you want to hear from Hiraeth to take us out?
Let's listen to the track that I am most happy with recording-wise of how it turned out is Observer, track 8, so the second-to-last track. And this is a song I wrote inspired by a conversation I had with a really close friend who was talking about sort of dealing with this feeling of struggling with a feeling of detachment, of feeling that you're sort of just watching what's happening instead of being a part of it. And it was a really long conversation that we had about just relating to people in the world and different ways to do it and how that can be really difficult. So that inspired this song called Observer.
Great. Charlie Rao, once again, thank you for joining us on Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook. This podcast will be up on the October 23rd So you guys can give that a listen. Just go to the podcast site, go to the links from the station, from the playlists, and check it out. And Charlie, I'm sure, will have the link as well on his site.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And give it a listen. And always a pleasure, Charlie. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Finn.
Take care.
You too. Thank you.